Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That's where somebody stepped on his foot. He lets out that little scream. Little known fact, music trivia. Okay, maybe not. Fake news. Paul Douglas here. Happy Thursday. We already made it to Thursday. Happy about that. Hope you're having a good day. A quieter day, at least for the Twin Cities on North and West. Mother Nature will not try to murder you anytime soon. It looks like the severe threat now, again, as I mentioned, far southeastern Minnesota into Wisconsin. I'm, you know, heartbroken for the loss of life out in Otter Tail County. And I want to talk to two storm chasers who were on the scene, and they captured amazing footage of this Kansas-sized tornado, been rated an EF3, may even be stronger than EF3. But the big story today, that Supreme Court ruling, the Supremes ruled 7-2 that the president is not immune from a New York prosecutor's effort to get his tax returns. Now, everybody's trying to spin this different ways. Most people believe it's a defeat for the president, at least a partial defeat. He fought to keep the details of his personal finances private. Now they can be turned over to a New York grand jury. And Trump's two appointees to the bench, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, joined the majority ruling. A blow for POTUS, who values loyalty above all else. But the Supreme Court will not allow Congress to access the president's financial records for now, all but ensuring that they won't be released before the November election. Again, the Supreme Court ruling that lower courts did not do enough to scrutinize congressional subpoenas for similar records. Just for the record, Chief Justice Roberts, Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, and Trump's own nominees, Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, ruled in favor of this. Thomas and Alito ruled against. And you may be sitting there saying, well, who cares, Paul? I got enough problems. My takeaway from the ruling is that no one is above the law, not even the President of the United States. Chief Justice Roberts wrote, for the majority, we reaffirm that principle today and hold the president is neither absolutely immune from state criminal subpoenas seeking his private papers, nor entitled to a heightened standard of need. So, speaking to reporters in the White House cabinet room after the announcement, the president responded to the rulings on whether he has to turn over his financial records, which could include more legal proceedings.
Well, the rulings were basically starting all over again, sending everything back down to the lower courts, and you start all over again. And so from a certain point, I'm satisfied. From another point, I'm not satisfied.
And, of course, the big story close to home, the tornado fatality Adam Carter told you about at the top of the hour, and I have an update from the Weather Service. Between 5 and 5:30, yesterday, a large tornado started around 6 miles southwest of Dalton, Minnesota. It crossed I-94. No vehicles were damaged. Mercifully, that tornado moved through mostly open farmland before ending 30 minutes later around 6 miles east-southeast of Dalton. Again, as Adam reported, Otter Tail County sheriffs confirmed the tornado hit three farmsteads in which a fatality occurred at the first farmstead. Two people injured at the second farmstead. They were taken to local hospitals. No information provided about the third farmstead. Damage at least EF3. It may have been stronger than EF3. And again, they're rated from 0 to 5. A 3 implies estimated winds 136 to 165. Further surveying of damage will continue in the coming days to designate a final rating. A couple of takeaways for me. There was a 1 minute lead time. 1 minute. Between when the warning went out and when the tornado touched down. And again, this is in the Grand Forks National Weather Service area, not the Twin Cities. Average lead time for tornadoes in America now is 13 minutes. That's an average. In this case, 1 minute. I was amazed as a meteorologist how quickly these storms erupted. And that's the key word. They just exploded over Otter Tail and Grant County. And it was a reminder to me that you can get tornadoes even if it's just a severe storm watch. The severe storm watch, we talked about that in the 5 o'clock hour. And almost 45 minutes after a severe storm watch was issued, these tornadoes spun up. We're going to be talking to one of the chasers who was on the scene sending back spectacular footage. Data the Weather Service used to issue these warnings and confirm that there was, in fact, a tornado on the ground. We'll talk to a storm chaser, Michael Mars, when we come back next. I'll tell you what, a good thunderstorm can be a religious experience. And I think most of you, maybe all of you, know what I'm talking about. Talk about no control, right? And I love a rainy night as much as the next guy. I can live without the tornadoes. And yet, there is something that captures our imagination when it comes to tornadoes. I think most Americans are fascinated with twisters. And the technology that we use to track these, Doppler radar, has come a long way. Fewer people are dying because of tornadoes. And yet, we still need spotters, and I would argue chasers on the ground confirming that rotation that shows up spinning thunderstorms on Doppler actually translate into actual tornadoes. Not all spinning thunderstorms go on to produce tornadoes. A subset of them do. So we need ground truth. We need professionals on the ground. I'm really happy to be able to introduce Michael Mars, who is a storm chaser who captured some of the most amazing footage I have ever seen in my weather career. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Has your heart rate come down from yesterday at all?
Oh, man. It's been up and down for a good 12 hours now, not much sleep. Heart rate's going pretty good right now just talking to you on the radio. I've been a big fan of yours just growing up watching the weather in Minnesota, so it's very awesome to speak with you.
I paid you $5 to say that, and it was worth every
no,
penny. Thank
no.
you. That's very kind of you. I appreciate that. I'm still fascinated by the weather. I'm a little kid at a candy store most days, and the question comes up, and I see it in the Twitter feed, and I understand the value of having professionals on the scene. What do you say to people when they say, well, why do you do that? Why would you risk your life to try to get close to these things? How do you answer that, Michael?
Yeah, that question definitely comes up a lot. So, it's a passion that myself and, there's other chasers across the country, I think we're just a different breed. Some people like jumping out of airplanes and skydiving or rock climbing. There's a lot of risky things you can do in life that draw people's interest. And severe weather has just always been my thing ever mm-hmm. since I grew up, watching The Wizard of Oz. The tornado scene in that film really, really struck me as a child. And then the movie Twister. And then, you know, just following the weather as I've been growing up, it's been something that I've just been extremely passionate about and sort of been self-taught. With the way the internet is these days, you can really learn a lot about anything. So I would just say it's just an extreme passion of mine, the weather and science. And, you know, when all the ingredients come together, and we were forecasting that tornado set up yesterday for a few days, and, you know, it wasn't a huge tornado risk, but there was definitely signs there that it could go big. So then when you see all those ingredients actually come together, it's just, it's the most fascinating thing I can even experience. I just, words and videos can't do it enough. You just have to be there and feel the power and hear the sound.
I'm with you. And I've been chasing in Oklahoma. I chased three times, and it was a lot of driving, thousands of miles, a lot of hail,
yep.
A lot of missed opportunities, a lot of far more misses than hits. But each time I chased in Oklahoma, I wound up, you know, intercepting a tornado. And it is an adrenaline rush unlike anything I've experienced in my lifetime. Tell us about yesterday, though. And the calculus that brought you to that specific tornado, you were tracking this, what, on a laptop?
I chased with just my iPhone. The laptop is going to be a bit too much work, especially most of the time you're driving. But I'm on my laptop at home before the chase and days before. So, yeah, regarding yesterday, we knew that we would have an MCS, which is that big complex of storms that rolled through Wednesday morning. And we knew if that could clear out in time, that was going to leave an outflow boundary behind, which is basically just rain-cooled air that can get modified during the day with sunshine. And that was probably going to help reinforce a warm front that was also setting up out in western Minnesota. So, we knew as long as it could clear out, there would be a weak low pressure area that would develop, right around, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, that tri-state area. So as long as that cleared out, which it did, and it became pretty apparent by about noon yesterday, the short range meso analysis on the National Weather Service site was showing that there was lots of, energy available, CAPE. And especially in the lowest levels, and also vorticity out there with that front. So yeah, I tracked that on the laptop, and then once I get in the car, it's just my phone. Once the stage is set like that, you really don't even need technology. You can just look at the sky.
No, I get it. You're right. There's a feeling, almost a sixth sense, and I know that you try to be as safe as possible. There's a way to approach a tornadic supercell from the south or southeast. You never want to cut through the hail core. You don't want to come through the rain. You could drive right into a tornado, which would be no fun.
Right.
It seemed, how far away were you from this, Michael?
I intercepted it a few times, and each time with a tornado like this, you're able to look up and see the occlusion, so you know the tornado is not getting bigger. You can see where it is on the ground. So visible high base tornadoes like this, you can really safely actually get pretty close. I would say within 200 yards, maybe 100 in the closest part of my video.
Wow.
You got to be careful, but like I said, we're a different breed, some of us. And like you said, you know, you go thousands and thousands and thousands of miles, hours, gas money, and you get disappointed so many times. So when you finally get that opportunity with the road to get close to something that powerful, it's just, you gotta grab it. And, you know, people are wondering, like, why would you do that? Why are you screaming? You know, it's very sad. I heard that one person died yesterday, and that's absolutely the last thing any of us chasers want to see. And we hate to see the damage. But the adrenaline just sort of takes over. So yeah, I would say about 100 yards there.
And it does become an intellect. Some of it is luck, but some of it is skill and the ability to try look at all the meteorological parameters and try to make sure that you are in the right place at the right time when these things spin up. Last question. We're going to have Brad Nelson on at 4:08 to talk about his story. My question, how competitive are you? How competitive are storm chasers? And do you do this full time? Do you have a full time gig?
I do this on my, I use vacation from work. I actually work at Owens Corning in Minneapolis. So I just take vacation days and I just travel around the Great Plains, you know, whenever the setups present themselves. Mm-hmm. So I would say it's definitely not a professional thing. It's more of a hobby for me, but I do it as much as I possibly can. And chasing has definitely seemed to get more competitive, and I try to stay away from all that. It can get pretty nasty in the chasing right. community sometimes. But there's a lot of there's a ton of great people out there that are not competitive, and especially here in Minnesota, it's a great chasing community. And another point about chasers and spotters, yesterday that storm is in what we call a radar hole, so it can't see the lowest part of the storm. So it's definitely important to have people out there looking for that rotation on the ground to confirm it.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you're okay. Be safe out there. Sure appreciate you calling in. And the next time you see an AF3 tornado, would you call us? Call us collect here at CCO?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on, Paul. It was awesome to talk with you.
My pleasure, Michael. Safe chasing ahead. Thank you very much. That was Michael Mars. I encourage you to look him up on Twitter. He's on my Twitter feed. Incredible video and photos. When we come back, speaking of incredible, Sean Moore is a pastor. He's also a former police officer and former military. He has a very unique perspective when it comes to policing. How do we reinvent policing? How do we get it to the next level? He's up next. Paul with you. Thanks for tuning in. We take nothing for granted, trying to balance the heavy news with some uplifting news, some weird news, and hopefully give you something to think about and talk about. Jordana, by the way, is off this week. She's on an RV adventure out east. She spent some time in New England with friends, and now she's visiting family in New Jersey. So we'll be hearing more from Jor as she heads back in that RV next week back to Minnesota. It has been just over 6 weeks since George Floyd's tragic death. Looking for ways that we can make sense of what happened, it seems senseless. I mean, there's no way to rationalize what happened to George Floyd. What we are trying to do is get as many different voices, diverse voices on the air to maybe get us out of our bubble, get us out of our comfort zone. And I'm speaking from firsthand experience, you know, looking at things differently. It's my pleasure to welcome Pastor Sean Moore, pastor at the beloved United Methodist Church in St. Paul, a former police officer and former military. Where did you serve, Pastor Sean?
So I served in the United States Navy. I was on the USS Haleakala AE-25 out of Guam, USA.
Wow. Very cool. I have a son in the Navy, so I love all the services, but I'm partial to the Navy. So thank you for your service, and thank you for joining us today. You teach conflict reconciliation at Bethel University and criminal justice at Metro State. I thought I was a type A. You got a lot going on, and I think you might have a unique perspective on the events that have unfolded, the convulsions that have taken place since George Floyd's death. What are you seeing in your community? It's been 6 weeks, and as a former police officer, where do you come down when people talk about defunding the police? Just curious to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think that's a really great question to start. I think when someone says we need to defund the police department, I think at the very core, what they're actually trying to get at is what is the solution to police brutality and racial injustice? And so how do we get at the core of that? And folks tend to believe that if you can defund the police department, then you'll have less cops responding to calls that may not include high violence calls that have to do that maybe you're more prepared for, like a social worker, mental health experts, mm-hmm. those types of issues. But I think what the question literally is, how do we solve the issue of police brutality and racial injustice? I think that when people say we want to defund them and put more funding into community activities, I understand having more community activities. And I do think there's a part to play with local law enforcement. There's also a community piece that needs to be addressed also. And so if you were in theory to remove every police officer with the snap of one finger, would the woes and issues that take place in the community magically go away? So that's another question that needs to be addressed. So I would say they will not go away with local law enforcement being removed. You may see a decrease in police brutality, but the idea of the police equals major harm in the community, I don't think that's the case. I think we all have a part to play.
Well, and I really struggle with this because as a would-be entrepreneur, if something isn't working, you pivot. You try another way. You fail and fail and fail until you succeed. And I just wonder, you know, what is policing version 2.0 look like? How can policing be effective and yet more compassionate? And I know some of this goes back to systemic racism. Some of it is a training issue. But if you could snap your fingers magically, what are some of the two or three top things that you think would help get us to a better place faster?
Well, I think number one is looking at community-led public safety, right? And so when I say community-led public safety, it literally needs to be community-led public safety. And if that means empowering the community to engage in new radical ways to heal itself, then we need to move in that direction. But at the same time, we also need to be concerned with folks and people who will not go along with the program, who are naturally agitators, whether they're in the community or outside the community, will have to be dealt with also. And so the same folks who are saying, we don't need the police, the question is, what happens when you need the police and they're not there because they've been removed? And so I think it's a very complicated question because the issue still comes down to what about the folks who just will be no people? Or again, what if there are like armed robberies in local stores and great harm that's done to people? And so I think that whatever we do, it needs to be community-led, but the idea of removing people who are accustomed and trained to deal with combative people are not going to go away, right? It's not going to go away. So we need to make sure and do both and.
And again, we're talking with Pastor Sean Moore, and former police officer, former military member, proud Navy alum. Appreciate your service, and I appreciate your perspective. And look, and maybe this is simplistic, I happen to believe, and it's more of a hope and a prayer than a belief, that most police officers are good people. They want to do the right thing. They want to serve. They want to serve their communities. Like anywhere else in life, there are bad apples. And so what I have trouble, Pastor, wrapping my brain around, when you go to apply to be a police officer, you're going to the academy, is there a more effective way to weed out the bad apples? I mean, and without becoming, you know, something out of a George Orwell movie, very big brotherish. How do you do that? I mean, you could look at somebody's social media feeds, perhaps, and say, well, yeah, this person obviously a closet racist. But again, how do you filter out the bad apples before they can do harm?
Gotcha. So I think addressing that question comes into two forms. There is the larger question of how do we actually deal with implicit bias and also systemic racism? And then how do we get the best officers that we possibly can out on the streets? And so I think Minnesota is one of the very few states that requires either a four-year degree or a two-year degree. And I believe that, again, at Metro State, I'm teaching diversity and criminal justice. So with what type of experiences do officers go through? I think there is a lack of community engagement. There may need to be more internships that where instead of randomly applying for different departments, that departments will pick candidates while they're in school and bring them out to do internships, that you have to deal with the community without being armed, like, as a CSO, but you're literally learning the community. So I think those are the big things. I think education goes a long way. But I also think that if we're not going to deal with the larger systemic issue of racism and implicit bias, because we all have a bias, we all have a leaning. And if you don't think we live in a racialized society, that's another problem, because we are racialized because race matters, right? And so whether you have dark skin or light skin, depending upon what tone your skin is, will depend upon the amount of benefits that you receive in a particular area. And so dealing with those two issues are highly important. But I would go to say, I agree with you that most officers are not trying to be harmful. They are, again, like I was courageous. I did the best that I could do. And I wasn't out trying to create lots of harm based upon race. So I think the majority of cops are really good. I think, A, they're in a system that that doesn't really work for them. The idea of not being able to tell another officer, I think what you're doing is wrong, and to be able to interfere needs to take place. I also think that our FBO system, like the way in which we train officers who are out in the field, needs to also change. We need to take a look at who's doing the FTO training also.
Right. Last question, and again, we're talking with Pastor Sean Moore with your police experience. And it's I think it's simplistic to mandate that police officers live in the communities they're serving. But do you believe that maybe there is a way to incentivize officers to live in the communities, not order it, not mandate it, but somehow make it attractive, make officers want to live in the neighborhoods that they are policing? Do you think that might help?
Sure. I think that might help. I also think that, again, it goes back to like extremes. Like there's what happens when you have to justifiably arrest someone who's created acts of violence and you're three blocks from them? What will their family do? And so I think until we're able to get to a point to where getting past the racial tension that happens between local law enforcement, I don't think there's very little that you can incentivize or incentives to have local law enforcement live in the communities in which they live in. I think that there needs to be a rebuilding of trust. And the question is, when do we have trust? I mean, you've got slave patrol, plantation police, sundown laws, Jim Crow. So I don't think there's ever been a time where local law enforcement in the black community have been in a position where they can see each other's true humanity.
Right. Well said. We're all the same. And how quickly we forget that, right? It's easier to blame somebody who doesn't look like us than look in the mirror and say, you know, I screwed up, or I should have done X, Y, and Z. But I sure appreciate what you're doing, your service, and I wish you the very best with this startup church, Beloved United Methodist Church in St. Paul. They are lucky to have you. Pastor Sean Moore, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, sir. You have a good day.
You too, sir. Thank you. When we come back, what do you think about sending your kids back to school? 130,000 families in Minnesota responded to a survey about how they feel about sending their kids back to school. Sloan Martin has the details next. Best years of my life? Well, look, every day is a miracle, right? But 2020, oof, man, we will all have interesting memories about this year. Yesterday, we ran a poll. Turns out, in contrast to what the state did, this is a piddly poll. This is Paul's piddly poll. But yesterday, we asked you, with what you know, How would you like to see fall classes resume? And again, the Minnesota Department of Education listed three scenarios. And it turns out that our poll, only 738 votes, but about 44% of respondents favor a hybrid approach. In class, yes, and also online, some sort of a mix. One in three, about 32% said yes to classroom learning only. And about 24% said distance learning only. I'm curious how that compares with a big poll, 130,000 Minnesotans surveyed by the Minnesota Department of Health. And Sloan Martin from the newsroom here to break that down. Hey, Sloan.
Hey, Paul, I know that you were kind of diminishing your non-scientific poll here, but I think that there are similarities between what you saw on your Twitter account and what we're seeing in the numbers here from the Department of Health. And to me, it said it's just really split, and it's going to be really hard to make a decision for what families are looking for. So the big numbers I can tell you, you already said over 130,000 families were surveyed over the last month. 64% said they would be comfortable. So yes, that is a majority, but we still have a quarter who were uncomfortable and 10% who said they were unsure. So more than a third are not quite comfortable at this time, though the people who said they were unsure said they would support daily cleaning and health updates and check-ins and also remote learning as well. It was also really split in terms of remote learning. In this case, we do have a majority saying rating distance learning is either bad or very bad, but still a sizable chunk, 45%, said it was good or very good. So a lot of split decisions that we're seeing here, and the Department of Health says this is just one factor that's going to inform the upcoming decision.
Very interesting. USA Today did a poll. Now, granted, this was back in late May, so I'm not sure if these numbers still hold up. But 20% of teachers said that they were not likely to return to teaching in the fall if schools reopen. Are you hearing anything about teachers?
Well, they weren't included in this specific poll, but I think that what we hear from the union, Education Minnesota, is a focus on health and safety of those teachers, because of course we want to think about the kids and what's going to be best for their well-being and their development. Of course, being in a school environment is fantastic for kids, and that's a big reason so many of these parents want their kids to go back, even if things are a little bit shaky. But you also have to think about those teachers and staff members who are at risk or don't feel comfortable. One thing I did think that was interesting from these parents that were surveyed, 43% reported having a child or family member who was medically fragile or at risk. That's a huge amount, and that really ties into what we're seeing in the population, which is why we're washing our hands and socially distancing and wearing masks when we are around other people. So it really ties in both what we're seeing in the population as well as what we're seeing in schools too. But I'll be interested to hear maybe more updated comments from teachers as we get closer, because I know a lot of people are waiting for an answer. And for the record, Paul, no timeline right now for when that official announcement might be.
Interesting. I noticed that the academic, physical, mental upsides associated with returning kids to school outweigh the risks, according to the American Academy of Pediatrics, who thinks kids should be in school. My question, and maybe we don't know this, this would come from the state, this would come from the governor. Those decisions would not be left to local school superintendents?
That is maybe what we're thinking right now. But I think, Paul, there's not a lot of clarity on what could happen. What we do know right now is that they are gathering evidence about transmission among kids, how to keep kids and teachers and staff safe. I feel like I don't want to jump to too much right now, because I think we are still in that data gathering phase between the Department of Health and the Education Department working side by side. But it's interesting you bring that up, because according to the poll here, statistically, the two biggest challenges that people reported with distance learning was their child having motivation or feeling empowered to do the work, and also changes in mental health because of the pandemic. Those were the two biggest challenges that parents reported. And this is across all races, too. They really lined up almost identically across different races. So I thought that was a really interesting element and speaks to why, you know, an association like that would make that kind of proclamation.
Sloan, we only have about a minute left. I'm just curious, are you hearing anything more about a possible mask mandate coming from the governor?
There still is a lot of chatter and rumors that that could be the direction that we're going. Nothing official at this time that I at least know of or have heard from other reports. We might, I know that yesterday, Minnesota Department of Health officials praised other municipalities like Edina and Rochester, for example, for going in that direction. There have been a handful of others as well whose city councils have voted for that mandatory mask mandate because it just clears the water. You're not making business owners be the mask police, for example. And plus, we know how much masks do cut down on transmission and how that could end up saving lives in the long run, as a model from Seattle pointed out yesterday that with universal mask usage in Minnesota, it predicted 200 fewer deaths by the time we get to November 1st.
Yeah, and Minnesota makes out better than almost, I think we were ninth in the country in terms of good outcomes in the future. So we hope those models, and believe me, I'm skeptical with all models, having been bludgeoned by models over the years. Sloan Martin, thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul.
Another storm chaser, another perspective from yesterday's outbreak, next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.